Welcome to Life in Business, the podcast for business owners ready to rewrite the rules and create a business and life you truly love. I'm Libby Langley, your host, business coach, Amazon bestselling author, and expert in helping you work less, earn more, and enjoy the journey. Each week, I share straight talking strategies and honest insights to help you simplify, grow, and find more joy in your business. Here's this week's episode. Welcome to another episode of Life in Business, and this one is very different. I'm breaking all my own rules here, and you're going to find out a little bit more about why that is. Not only am I recording this in the evening, which is very unusual for me, but I have a guest, and I have the absolutely fantastic Denise Duffield-Thomas with me today. And if you don't know who she is, I'd be surprised if you don't know who she is, but if you don't know who she is, she's a money mindset mentor and works with online entrepreneurs who want to make money and change the world. And I just love that ethos. And I've been in Denise's world for I've been a member of a money bootcamp for I think maybe 3 years or so, but we, Denise, have met in person several times. So first of all,
yes.
thanks for coming along.
Well, I did bully you into it, as we said,
because it was your idea.
It was my idea because you are one of my favorite people that I met in my UK tours. And I was so excited last night. I was like, oh, this is my first call of the day because I do 5 interviews on a Thursday. And then this morning I said to Mark, oh, I'm on Libby's podcast. And I basically bullied her into having me as a guest. She doesn't have guests, but I told her she had to.
No, and I'm quite happy to bend the rules for you because it's just a good excuse to have a bit of a natter about life and about business and about stuff. And I said to my husband, because he knew I was really looking forward to this, and he said, oh, you know, maybe I'll ask her for your autograph. And then I kind of reminded him that actually Mark worked for Manchester United for a long time. And I think really the preference would be for the two of them to just sit in a darkened room together and bore each other instead of the football stories.
Who's his team?
Same, Man U. Lifelong.
Oh, okay. That's awesome.
Yeah, I
think it's been, I don't know about you, but for the last year, because they've been doing so badly, not that I follow football that much, but I'm always just like, oh my God, how embarrassing for you. So I'm just like, oh, it's so bad. But Mark, yes, so even though we live in Australia now, Mark has his Lego Man United stadium.
Oh, does he?
In his office, which of course now they're doing a new stadium.
I know, it's
so
very
you
exciting.
Have to get a new Lego thing. Look at us pretending we know about football.
I mean, I did not expect us to kick off with a conversation about football, but there you go. That's the whole beauty of it. It's the whole beauty of it. So,
you know, can I share this one thing? This is so exciting. So, yeah. My nephew, who is like 8 years old, he's doing all these trials for like Everton.
Oh, is he? That's exciting.
Yes, as a goalkeeper. So, so little Duffield will, then his parents are manifesting it. They've been talking about it since he was born, basically, that one day he'll be a professional footballer. And so it's being said first on this podcast.
Wow, watch this space, yes. Everybody. How very exciting.
Yeah, Seth Duffield. Let's make it happen.
Yeah. Going to get the name on the back of the shirt ready, you know.
Exactly.
So when we met, we were in London and you got your Hello Wembley moment on stage, which was really, really exciting. Not going to talk about the event itself because there was a, you know, I think it's generally agreed that you were absolutely incredible, but there was a misalignment going on with the event as a whole. But we met in the bar afterwards because you came up, there were a few, I don't know, 4 or 5 of us sitting in the bar, and you came up looking for some food and ended up spending the evening with us, which was great. And one of the things that really struck me about that whole experience was the sparkling water. Yeah, and that's probably not what you were expecting me to say. But you don't drink. And so you just bought a few bottles of sparkling water and everybody didn't drink. And actually, I think it's probably you I have to credit or blame for the fact that I really like sparkling water. And also perhaps the fact that I also don't drink either now. So Where did that decision for you come from to stop drinking? Is it age related? Is it business related? Is it lifestyle related? You know, because there's lots and lots of people that deciding not to drink now.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's a bit of all of the above. And actually, I moved to the UK when I was 22. And I would say I've always been quite an introverted person. And I grew up in a family with a lot of instability and also a lot of family members who had problems with drink and alcohol, and drugs. And so I think I've always been someone who's never overindulged in those things. But there's been occasions when I did, and I used to call it like Fun Denise comes out like once a year, and it would be like quite a bad experience where I would have not only like completely blackout from it, but I would do things like steal traffic cones or just like go a bit wild. And I remember there was this one night where I stole bottles of champagne from a bar. And these things would literally only happen once or twice a year, but it was enough to make me feel like a bit out of control. So I remember when I moved to the UK at 22, I didn't drink for a while, and it wasn't even like a massive conscious thing. But I remember the reaction was so much more intense than even in Australia, which we have a huge drinking culture in Australia. And people were really shocked about it. And like, you don't drink. Like, it was like people just could not understand. And, you know, I think if this was probably early 2003, and it was just so alien to people. And so I'd had bouts of it in my life where I'd never really been bothered about it anyway. But I think where, for me, this most recent one, it came from perimenopause. I was waking up in the middle of the night, you know, feeling dehydrated. And also, I think during COVID, a lot of people started drinking more.
I think you're right. Yeah, they did. Yeah.
What happened to me. And also because of we had our farm, and I started just to be like, oh, come to our farm and we, you know, have a glass of wine. And I was like, I can't live like this every day, you know, like, and so for me, I had a really bad night on gin and I woke up the next day and I just went, oh, I'm not going to drink anymore. And that was about 3.5 years ago. And I find it easier for me to have black and white things like that. I wouldn't say it's a rule. Like, I could drink if I wanted to. I'm not an alcoholic, but it was like, it's just easier for me to be like, I just don't, rather than, oh, am I going to have one glass or three glasses or, you know, so it's just easy. It's like a non thing for me. And also because I have young kids too, hangovers with kids, it is just the worst. So yeah, there's no massive reason behind it, but I do feel like I do feel better, but I'm still massively tired from having kids anyway.
Just from life.
Just from life.
No, sure.
But yeah, it's not a big philosophy or anything, but I have to say I was at a retreat in Provence with one of my business mentors, and I had sparkling water with a bit of cordial in it, and I accidentally picked up someone's wine and took a swig, and literally my body spat it out. Like, I just went like in front of everybody. And it was just like my body just went, no, it's just not good.
Even
for
the
you.
Smell of it, I can't bear the smell of it at all now. It's interesting what you say. My experience is really similar. You know, just never been a big drinker, but I've had times where I've drunk way too much, you know? And it's never pretty. And I just thought I don't need this in my life at all anymore. And so I'm the same as you. It's just gone and it's not a thing and it's not a, just doesn't bother me. And it hasn't changed anything for the negative. And I think for the positive, it's just one less thing to worry about, really.
Yes.
That's kind of how I would think about it. So yeah, I was curious to ask you about that because I know it's a thing. And like I say, I know lots of people who are deciding not to drink for various reasons. Do you think it makes a difference to how you run your business? Has it changed like any business events for you or your productivity? Probably not if you didn't drink that much.
No, it's really no, but I will say the aha I think around it is I am a bit of a control freak and I don't like being out of control. And so I definitely, when I go to events, and you've probably realized this from meeting me a few times, like I am very introverted in real life, but when I'm at an event, I'm on.
Yeah.
And I don't like being out of control in that thing. So I kind of think I like being the sober person in the room, so then I don't say anything, because I say bad things anyway, like not bad things, but I am such an oversharer anyway that I just think I don't want to be out of control. And I feel like I want to be fun Denise and professional Denise, but not silly Denise. And actually sometimes when I was drinking at home during the pandemic and all we had was social media, I was getting a bit mean, you know, and like just getting, I don't know, like in a righteous way, but a very self-righteous way. There was a lot of things going on globally at that time, not even just pandemic wise, but, you know, say for example, the Johnny Depp Amber Heard trial, which really like impacted me on such a deep level. And I felt so angry about how this woman was being treated that I would kind of have a glass of wine and I'd be like on Twitter. And I just think, again, it's that feeling of out of control. I've also never been someone who's taken a lot of drugs, but in the last couple of years, I remember I tried like weed twice. And again, it was that feeling, I do not like being out of control. And I feel like I don't need it to give me confidence or anything like that too. So I think it's such an interesting conversation, but I think it is so relevant to what your podcast is about too, because our lives are so entwined with our businesses. It's very hard to keep them separate. And so anything that we do has an impact on our business and our decisions. And I can see now, like sometimes I'll see people going off in a group and I think, you're sitting there with wine and drinking and getting angry and saying things that you wouldn't normally say.
Yeah, it is. It is funny. I've talked on episodes before about my experience with giving up drinking and my husband wanting to cut back on drinking and kind of the different ways we approach things. And I do think it's all absolutely relevant to how we run our businesses, because when you run your own business, you've got to be really in control a lot of the time, because you have to make 100 million decisions before breakfast, you know, it just kind of never stops. And anything that makes that harder, well, makes it harder, right? So, you know, you get, as you say, you get to choose, right? You get to choose what you choose your heart and get to choose what you do. So, yeah. And how do you think that because you've been diagnosed with ADHD, I'm autistic ADHD. How do you think that has, not necessarily with the drinking, but with running a business, how do you think that's made a difference? The knowing, because obviously we've always had this, right? But we've only known for, I'm 2 years, are you 3 years? Something like that?
Something like that, yeah. Something like
so
that.
So relatively late diagnosed, right? We're both late diagnosed. And do you think that once you knew about that, it helped you, it was easier to run your business, or it had a positive impact on running your business, or made it harder?
It's really interesting. I've had a lot of reflections on this, especially this last couple of months, because I'm undoing some decisions that I've made in my life for my business that were pre-diagnosis, which I can go into a little bit more. But I think knowing has been incredibly powerful, because probably like you, there has been times in my life where I thought, what the heck is wrong with me? Yeah. Like, why, you know, why am I struggling with this so much? And I was trying to explain to someone yesterday about going to university in the early 2000s, where there was zero accommodations for any differences. And even to the point where I was trying to explain, like, lectures were not online, class timetables were not online. And so I have these very deep, shameful memories of going, I've got an exam today and I have to go to this one place on campus where they print out everyone's names and where your exam room is, because they don't put it online. And so I would be late to that. I didn't know which exam. I was like, I think I've got an exam. I don't know where it is, what exam it is, what time it is. Going to that one place with it printed out. I have dyscalculia too. And so reading timetables and reading lots of information on a page is incredibly hard for me. And so then I'd go, okay, I'm supposed to be on the other side of campus now and doing an exam there. I need a calculator for it. And I'd turn up with no calculator, no pen, not knowing what was going on. And now I think, oh my God, so many things are easier now, because I had to, you know, learn all of those things, accommodate myself. But also, as the technology got better, I don't lose my wallet anymore, because I don't have a wallet.
No, for sure. I mean, if I lost my phone, I'd be screwed, you know. but it's, yeah.
Yes, but I never lose my phone.
Not going to lose my phone.
Exactly.
No.
Everything's in my Google Calendar. You know, I get reminders about things. And so life is so much easier now. And I think a lot of those very painful things would have been so much better, even just knowing that, But as I said, you know, I'm unwinding some decisions that I made pre-diagnosis. And one of those things is we're selling our rose farm, which is a pre-diagnosis decision. And there's been a few things like that that I've had to unwind the last couple of years of kind of a bit more risk-taking behavior or, you know, overly optimistic kind of stuff. And I think I kind of felt like, not that I ran out of steam a little bit, but it's just I realized how much more I value stability and like nervous system stability rather than those crazy ups and downs that I felt like, not that I was addicted to, but I was just so used to feeling in fight or flight all of the time. And now, yeah, I can't deal with it anymore.
I think you're right. I think that I agree with that completely, because I think, you know, we spent so many years in good careers before we started our businesses, like, pushing and achieving because we could push and achieve. And because being neurodivergent often comes with this extra super special layer of feeling like you're a disappointment and, you know, you don't fit in with the world. Yay for that, that you push and you try so much harder. So when you start, you have a business, the world, I mean, there's more choice than you can possibly comprehend. And so you do it all because you can do it all. And that also proves what a success you are. And I agree with you completely that once I got diagnosed, it's like, oh, it's not, I don't need to fit in with that world. I fit in with my world, or I create my own world and I create my own business to suit me. And it's definitely been very, very empowering, that. I think I just wish it had happened when I was, you know, 9 or something, and life would have been a lot easier along the way, I think.
Absolutely. I mean, I've got 3 kids. One has been diagnosed with ADHD. Mm. 2 could, but they're girls, so it's trickier, right? Mm. But also a lot of the things that I struggled with at that age, we helped them with, like even going to high school, which was a big thing for me too, because there were different rooms. Suddenly you weren't in the same room. When we went to the local high school last week, because Willow will be going there next year, you know, she was going, how am I going to remember where everything is? And I was like, babe, we are going to write a timetable for you. We're going to laminate it. We're going to stick a copy of it in every book. We're going to, you know, pin a copy to your bag. My mum was undiagnosed, so she did none of that. You know, so I lost my bus pass every day because there was no adult in my life to go, well, let's laminate it and attach it to your bag so you don't have to walk to school every day because the bus driver won't let you on. And so it's a really like tricky thing to go, okay, well, then how much of my resilience and ambition and drive is from those experiences too? Yeah, I don't know. Have you ever had that feeling of going, well, I had to learn to overcome it, so that's why I'm successful?
Yeah, I think there's a huge element of that, really. I don't think about that side too much. I just feel there's a sense of sadness of kind of how difficult things were and how, you know, how well I achieved and just in life, despite that. But it's the happiness levels for me. And I think now with your kids and my youngest stepdaughter, she's going through the ADHD diagnosis as well at the moment. And I think it's just so much more recognized. So I don't know about you, but I've got certainly this kind of radar now of like, I'll talk to people, I'll talk to clients and potential clients, and I'm like, not a doctor, not a psychiatrist. However, I think probably you're one of us. And just the understanding now that we talk about this stuff much more, right? I mean, nobody, it was the naughty boy thing. And that was it when we were kids, or the weirdo thing. But thankfully the world has changed, but yeah, we probably do have a lot of extra resilience because of that. So yeah, whilst I wish it was different, maybe there's some element of thanks to younger selves for the way they coped with stuff.
Well, I know one thing that I have for sure from that is this ability to improvise. Mm. And I think that's because I was always so ill-prepared for things that I had to for example, learn how to read a whole book in 10 minutes and, you know, quickly scan something and go, right, cool. But I understand the cost of that now. And I think a lot of people have thought for a long time, I'm very calm, you know, chilled person. And I kind of am in some ways, but I think it's I've learned how to do that, even though inside I'm like, you know, a mess of anxiety and stress because yeah. I've had to learn to go, shit, I don't know what I'm doing here. And I have to pretend like I did the homework and let me just quickly learn it in 2 seconds. But also growing up, I was a performer as well. I was a dancer. And so, you know, I've got my five interviews today and I feel like the ritual of getting ready for a speaking gig for things like that is very similar for me performing. You know, I don't have autism, but I imagine that is that masking thing, right? But those mm-hmm. little tools help me to go, well, I've got my hair, I've got my lashes on, I've got my spray tan. All of those things feel like a little bit of a shield. But also that thing of, even though I might not feel ready or I haven't done the homework, so to speak, I look like I have, and that's half the battle for me. And I feel like I'm kind of unlearning that a little bit too, of going, oh, maybe I don't need those crutches as much. And I don't know about you, I think there's a bit of an ego death that's happened recently of going, well, if I'm not that ambitious, pushing person, like who am I? It's a weird thing for me. I don't know if you've experienced that too.
Yeah, it is a weird balance. It's funny what you say, because as soon as we came onto this call, because I was like, oh, you look so beautiful and shiny and polished. And I'm like, yeah, I'm just going straight to bed after this. So just
like, you look beautiful. I'm sitting here looking at you going, oh my God, Natalie Imbruglia. You just look gorgeous.
You're very sweet. You're very sweet. But it's funny because that's really one thing that's been a huge part of my unmasking is I'm just going to turn up how I want to turn up. And what's the worst that can happen? You know, if people don't like, and I mean, obviously you would be fine with whatever if I did turn up in my pajamas and dressing gown, you would be cool with that. I know that. But it's, you know, arriving in situations. Like one thing that I did, I realized that I don't like wearing dresses. And so I've just stopped wearing dresses. And it's been such an obvious yet enormous thing. And I do think it's part of this, maybe letting go of some of the ego. You mentioned ego. You know, when I had a proper job, corporate job, it was suited and booted and heels and all of this. And now I just don't think that it doesn't matter because I run my own business and I help people with my mind. I'm not a fashion expert. I'm never going to be. I don't want to be. So none of that kind of matters as much. I think that's really empowering when we get to do that, particularly as women, because men have just turned up at how they like forever. So maybe now it's our turn.
Oh, absolutely. But I think then that has a knock-on effect to everything else. And one of the things I've realized too is I really dislike doing keynotes.
Yeah, you've mentioned that a few times.
It is the most stressful. It's so stressful. I can't even begin to tell you like how much that event that we met at impacted me on such a deep level. We can talk about that in a second.
I think we talk about that offline maybe as well in more detail, but yeah.
Yeah. And realizing to go, you know what, I'm just going to say to people, hey, I don't do, you know, traditional keynotes with slides, because the slides are the thing that kills me, I think. And to say, you know what, I'm best where I can speak off the cuff, I can just answer questions from people, but I'm not going to do that anymore. And so if you want me, it's kind of like that or nothing. And of course, there is a privilege you get to a point in your career, I think, sure, where you can say that. But also, you can kind of do that from the beginning and just to be like, well, it's not what I'm good at, or it's not. I had so many epiphanies at that event. It was actually truly a life-changing experience for me in so many ways. So first of all, some of the things were, it wasn't even actually about the event at all. It was totally me and how I showed up there that I went, oh my God, I need to, like, I almost quit my business over it.
Did you?
It's just so.
Yeah.
Yes. It was. I think it was so confronting.
I was surprised, obviously delighted, you know, but surprised that you were there at that event. And I know we spoke about that night when we were talking in the bar. And but we don't always we don't always know what it's going to be like, do we, until we arrive somewhere. We just get booked for a gig and then you're like, oh, or yay, whichever, or generally speaking, just somewhere in the middle. There were some I had a bad experience with someone that I met there too. You know, I got burnt quite badly by someone. And I think it was just the room was set up for people who think differently to us, shall we say.
Yes. And I there's nothing, you know, I think the person who runs the events is so beautiful. It's nothing to do with that. For me, I think the reason why it was so profound, one, I don't normally speak to mixed gender audiences.
Yeah.
And I think this is a really key thing too, of going, know your lane, know who you are, know who your audience is.
Yeah.
And so I realized how much I am very comfortable speaking to a lot of women, but not necessarily men. Mm-hmm. And that's my stuff to deal with, I'm sure. But it was just like, oh no. And I love when there are a sprinkle of men who just come up and they're like, oh, you know, I know I'm not your audience, but I love you. And they're, you know, they're just beautiful. I love that so much. So it's not, but, oh God, I don't even know how to process this. Where do I even start? Okay. I was having an epiphany in the shower because I was trying to think about it, because obviously that's how we met.
Not in the shower. We didn't meet. Really
No. Just before this call. Because when something has such a profound impact on me like that, I really go to town on why, right? Mm. So I had many sessions with my kinesiologist about this afterwards. One of the things I think that brought up for me was a difficulty in receiving. And I'll tell you where it's not even compliments or gifts. Those things I just bounce off. I go, I'm here to work. You're not really complimenting me as a person. Like, I don't take it in from a surface level, right? Because I think that can be very dangerous for your ego when people are lining up to take photos with you. And, you know, it's a very strange experience. It's not something I ever aspired to be famous, but in those rooms you are famous.
Yeah.
So that has its own thing. But it's more about, I felt like, oh no, I'm responsible for all of these people, and realizing how hard it can be for me to receive that, because then I feel like, oh no, don't give me your heart. You know, don't make me feel like I'm responsible for your life. And it's a very confronting thing for me to think about, to take that on, that responsibility of being a role model to people. Sometimes can be really difficult. And, you know, in our circles, I am, you know, a big fish in a small pond in that way, right? Many people in the world do not know who I am, and I like it that way, because when I have those little experiences of fame, it's so uncomfortable for me. And it was more extreme that in that event that I've had for a long time. For example, I was about to speak on stage and I said to the guy, I said, oh, can you not do a big intro to me? Because I hate when you have to like stand off on the stage and then it's like, and you walk up and you're a bit breathless.
Yeah.
You know, when you come to the microphone and you go, oh shit, I just used up so much energy walking up onto the stage and now I actually can't speak. And then you go, oh, and you just start off in such a weird way. So I said, hey, do you mind if I just start on stage with you? So then it's not a big deal. And he's like, yeah, no problem. And then I felt like, oh, then it feels okay. And normally what I do before I speak, because I know I'm going to be nervous, I make sure I go in and meet as many people as possible in the audience. So then I feel like, oh, I've got a friend I can look at.
Yeah.
You know, oh, that friend's too, you know, I can just look at her and she can nod at me and I'll feel like we're amongst friends. But what happened was someone goes, oh, can I get a photo? And I went, sure. And then I kind of bent down from the stage and then someone's, oh, she's doing photos. And then there was like this line of like 40 people. And I felt so, I was just like, how do I deal with this? And then it was like, okay. And it was just such a weird experience to like be, I don't know, like famous in that way. Right. And then I had to go straight from stage and whisk to somewhere else. And it was one of those events where I just went, oh my God, people feel entitled to my time and energy. And, you know, I had people be like, oh, can I just get one more photo? Oh, the photo we took yesterday, my eyes are a little bit closed. Can I just get one more? I was like, no problem. I took photos with like 300 people, you know, and I still got people after it sending me a message. Oh, Denise didn't, you know, she didn't sign my book or whatever. And I was thinking, I literally could not have been more accessible over and above my contracted, you know, stuff. And I realized to when I go to something like that, I almost feel I'm like so accommodating. I'm like, oh, can I help you put the chairs out? Can I help you do this thing? But I had one hilarious experience actually, because I was there for 6 days and I saw six shows while I was there because I love shows. And so I was basically like, okay, I've got a breakfast VIP thing that I'm going to see a matinee and whatever. So there was one of the days I went out and I saw a show, and then in my calendar, it said dinner with the speakers. And I was like, oh, this is great. I get to know all the other speakers. So I'd been out in London all day seeing shows, and I come back, I thought, oh, just like, you know, go to my room, go to the toilet and head up. And I got out of the lift and someone met me. Oh, hi, Denise. Oh, we're great. You ready for dinner with the speakers? I was like, I sure am. And then we got into this room and there's like 100 people. And I was like, oh. It's dinner with the speakers. And I am one of the speakers.
Oh, no.
And so they were like, so you're ready? Yeah, they're like, you ready for the panel? And I was like, I sure am. And I had like no makeup on, like nothing. And a lot of the people who'd bought the tickets for that VIP experience were lucky bees, you know, from my community.
Yeah, sure.
And so it was a bit awkward because I was like, has anyone got a question for any of these like four speakers? And almost every question was for me. And I was just like, this is happening. And I was like, totally fine. But what happened was, and this is so TMI, sorry, Libby, I was standing there and I got my period. And you know, when you know, like, you know, it just comes on, right? Yeah. And I was like, I guess I'm just going to have to keep, like, the show must go on, right?
Yeah.
And then afterwards, it was like, I was trying to get away. So, can I just photo? Can I? And I was like, yep. And then someone followed me into the lift because they, you know, and then I was like, great. And I'm just like, I'm just going to go to my room now. And I was like, wow, I really need to work on my boundaries. And I was, I think that's why I said I almost quit my business over it. Not because it was a terrible event. I wasn't treated bad. Nothing like that happened. But I realized how bad I am with boundaries.
Mm.
And, you know, what was a 3-day speaking engagement with, oh, it's, a, you know, there's a VIP breakfast. And I was like a Disney princess. Have you ever been to Disneyland when you go to the character breakfast?
Yeah. No, I mean, you say before, yeah, you're so like Mickey Mouse, you know, events. They come in. You know, that's what you say, don't you? You're like Mickey Mouse, right? You kind of turn it on, perform, and then go, oh, thank the Lord, when you go back to your hotel room and shut the door, you know, yes, take the mask off. It's hard. It's hard work, though, isn't it? It's very draining to be like that. But that event, actually, it was interesting because I spoke to the organisers and I forget the percentage now, but something like 60% of the ticket sales were through your affiliate. Or through your link to it. So many people were there because of you and weren't there because of the event. And I think that's why there was, you know, why there was the kind of clamour for you, because obviously you don't come over to the UK very often and people are like, oh, it's Denise, you know, and which is great, but enormously overwhelming. And like you say, the pressure on you then to be amazing from start to finish is, you know, I mean, it's not realistic, right? Is it? Because you're a human, the same as the rest of us. Tough.
Well, yeah, it was just a weird experience, even for that breakfast where I was like, wow, people bought a VIP thing to have breakfast with me. As how am I supposed to do this with 70 people? And so I remember just saying, okay, everybody, I'm going to come to each table one by one and I'll take a photo. And so I was like, get your camera ready. And I was like, standing up, let's look at the lights. So it's because I'm like, this is why I get my hair and makeup done, because I'm going, if I'm going to take all these pictures of people, I better look bloody amazing. And so I'm like, okay. And I literally went to every table and I was like, photo, let's do it, because I knew that everyone wanted their, you know, their picture. And then I was like, I started going in my mind thinking, you know, I was like, oh, what if people are really disappointed meeting me in person? They see these beautiful, you know, curated videos and photos. And so I'm sitting there, you know, 20 centimeters away from people going, are they looking at my, you know, real life wrinkles? And have I got a booger in my nose? And then I think I can't eat because then I'm going to have stuff in my teeth. And it's just like a really weird, weird experience. But I know that if I turned up and I was wearing no makeup and I did have something in my teeth, people would love it. And so I think I came home and very much went, who am I as a person?
Mm, yeah.
What do I want?
Yeah.
because I don't want fame. I think I was at a fork in the road moment in my business too, where I was like, how big do I want to go? Do I want to be, you know, like, I don't know, Gabby Bernstein in my industry or whatever? It was a real fork in the road moment. I still don't know how I feel about it, because there's still times where I think I would love to, you know, have a show like Oprah, but I think it was just that moment of going, do you really? Because even though everyone you meet is beautiful and lovely, no one was horrible and mean, but it's just like en masse, that kind of connection is very difficult, I think, to sustain. And I'm so happy that we got to connect and meet, because I feel like I don't remember anyone that I met there, because you can't remember everybody. And you can't.
Mass.
You can't. But also then everyone feels like you have, you know, a best friend connection, because I would feel terrible if someone was like, oh, Denise snubbed me and she was a real bitch, so I have to be like on my best behavior. But at the same time, I just go, but it's, I don't use this word lightly, but it is a little bit dehumanizing in a way. And I feel like if you live your life like that too much, I think you do start to lose a little bit of who you are. And I could see it happening a little bit in my own life, where because I had, you know, speaking gigs or things on, I'd be like, if one of my kids was sick, I'd be like, get away from me. I've got a speaking gig next week. You know, I'm like, I must be protected. But not me as a person. Who cares about me as a person? As long as you can get up on stage and do your thing. But it was kind of like, yeah, well, you guys should, you know, get out of the house because I've got calls on. And I was like, I don't want everything in my life to be in service of, you know, Denise DT, if it doesn't fulfill me as a person. And so after that event, later on that year, I was in the UK for 4 months, and I did do that one event in Bristol, which was, again, I think that was less challenging, because I could.
Well, it was your event. So yeah, you got to control the Bristol one. It was very, it was very different.
Yes, I did and I didn't, because my publisher did a lot of this.
Well, so no, but I mean, it
would have made different decisions.
You were the whole thing, so there was more. It wasn't so right, I'm going to be there for that hour and on stage for that 40 minutes or anything. It was much more relaxed. But do you think in business as a whole that we always perform a little bit? Do you think that's kind of part of our requirement, that there still has to be? Because, you know, your business is your name, my business is my name. And so do you think that by us being literally the figureheads and the faces of the business, that we hide a bit of our private lives and private selves? I mean, we're both massive oversharers, right? So there's not much that we hide. But there is still some that is precious to us. And that's important, right, in business, don't you think?
It's hugely important. And so I have almost my rules for myself now. So I don't talk about my sex life, for example. I don't talk about my body. I don't talk about my kids. Well, I don't show my kids.
Yeah.
I probably talk a bit about them. And so I needed to have my own scope of what's in and what's out, because you could ask me anything. I could talk about it for an hour, you know, but should I?
Yeah.
You know, and so there's a bit of that, but also I think energetically I had to very much separate myself from the business to help make decisions in a different way too, to say, you know, well, that serves the business. And even the way I run my business at the moment, because I've kind of taken a bit of a sabbatical over the last 18 months, it's giving me a little bit more distance from things. Energetically, I think, to be like, no, I am not my business. It is a separate entity. And one of those rules for me is that I don't do work where I live. So I don't do any speaking engagements. I mean, I don't do a lot anyway in general, but I live in Newcastle, which is about 3 hours from Sydney. So you think kind of Manchester, London-y kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But that has really helped me, because I don't want to feel like I'm on show, because when I'm at an event like that, I know everything is on show. Even if I'm just sitting, oh, I saw you once at Bunnings, but you were yelling at your kids and your husband and I didn't want to disturb you. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like me. You know, I'm sitting picking my nose at the traffic light, well known that people are just picking, just scratching a vagina at the, you know, checkout.
Picking her pants out of bum. Yeah.
I'm like, no. Exactly. That's a good rule for me. And that's the reason why I batch a lot of my content too, because I think that you get to a point where you think everything's content. So you go, oh, I can't just have a cup of tea. I've got to record myself having a cup of tea. And it's a bit of a trap, I think, to fall into of everything's content. So I can't ever relax. And so this is why now I batch my interviews, I batch my podcast. I, you know, have my video days, my photo days, and then I can kind of relax. I still sometimes record things like this morning when I was putting my makeup on, I was like, I might as well do a time lapse and I can talk about that. But I've broke myself from that habit of thinking, oh shit, I need to record this, because it's, then you just, I think you lose yourself as a person. And I think with our personalities too, we take it too far. And this is where I realized, I was like, oh, I'm really good at batching, you know, my podcast. So I'm going to do 12 in a day. And then, oh, I'm really good at batching this. And so instead of going, I'll have this big bit of work and then I can relax a little bit, I'm like, I was like this all the time because I could. Yeah.
So you lose, you kind of lose your sense of, it's the same as we said to start with, wasn't it really? That because you can do all this stuff and because stuff becomes easier and easier and easier, and then you do more and more and more, and then you defeat the object of the simplicity that you're trying to introduce because you just load stuff on. I think that really... I don't know if it, well, it's all, everything, but, you know, being a business owner, being a woman, being a busy person, being neurodivergent, all of those things, it's almost like you're in a constant battle with yourself to just breathe.
Yeah.
You have to say no. The biggest boundaries that I think we need to instill are with ourselves, because otherwise we'll just get so carried away.
Exactly. Well, I remember when I went on that 4-month trip to the UK, and it was, this was very much like, our youngest is starting school soon. This is a great chance to get away as a family, see Mark's family in the UK. We prepped a lot of our work. So all I had to do when I was over there was my boot camp calls twice a month.
Mm.
Fine. And I remember on the first week, I was like, me reading a book. I should write a blog post about this. I should do a video of me reading a book, you know, to show everyone, it's okay to take time off, guys. Read a book.
Ridiculous.
And then I was like, what am I doing? And so I had someone recently, she goes, I can't believe you were in Cheshire for 4 months. And I said, I could not tell anybody because it would be like, oh, can you come on my podcast? Oh, can you do the thing? And I want to be accommodating. And so I would have just spent the whole time defeating the purpose of doing it.
Yeah.
But also being like, oh, look at me, away with my family and being so present. No, I'm not. So actually what I took up when I was there was cross-stitch.
Which you're now...
Because I was like, I can't sit and scroll on my phone.
But now with the cross-stitch, but now you become obsessed with the cross-stitch. It's just like, do you not just replace one thing with another?
Yes and no. I did have a breakthrough around this actually, because first of all, I was thinking, this is a great low stakes hobby, because I got like a half done one from a charity shop. So I went, who cares? And it was like the ugliest 90s cross stitch. I had so much fun with it because we were doing Secret Santa in the UK, right? So every time my stepfather came into the room, I'd go, oh, don't look at this. This is your Secret Santa present. And it was like the ugliest cross stitch. It was the funniest thing. And his face was always like, oh, and I was like, oh no, don't show Steve. But I realized, I was like, oh, you can sit and do it and people feel like you're doing something really productive and you're not being rude. And so I was like, this is amazing. But then I came home and I went, I'm going to enter this in a cross-stitching competition. And
of course it was the
most stressful thing of my life, because we had to hand in it at like midday on this particular day. And I hadn't framed it. So I was in the car and I was like sweating, trying to frame this thing and crying. I took a video of it, of course. I haven't shared it yet, but I was like, it was so stressful. And I like ran in and it was like one, and I handed in, and this lady at this country fair thing is like, okay, sure. And then Libby, this was the funniest thing. So there was three people in my category. So they awarded a first, a second, and a highly commended. So they didn't even give me third place. That was three people, Libby.
You got a nice try.
I did. I got a participation award. But But it was so exciting to me. And so then this year I went, I'm going to do it again. And this year I entered two. And then on the morning, the whole weekend, I was going, I haven't framed my cross stitches yet. Should I go out to the thing, to the charity shop, find frames, find matting? I was like Googling stuff. And I kept on thinking, I'll do it tomorrow. That weekend, it was Willow's birthday. She had two sleepovers. My God, crazy. So Sunday night, and I was like, I'll just get up really early in the morning and do it. The next day, I was also supposed to be in the podcast studio the whole day, by the way. So I got up and I was like, okay, I'm gonna do it before I go to the podcast studio. And then I looked up to see, and I was like, okay, I can go at 8:30. And then you know what? This is the biggest thing. I went, I don't have to do this.
You don't.
I'm going to lose $6 because it was $3 to enter each cross stitch. I'm like, I'm going to lose $6. I'm actually just not going to do this. And it was like such permission to just be like, oh my God, this is great. That being said, I have got a new piece that I'm entering for the Easter show. And if I finish it, I finish it. And if I don't, I've got one of my other ones that I can chuck in there. And I don't have to frame it. It's an unframed one. And I thought, why not? So I think I'm just getting to a point where I'm like, I don't have to. And also, why am I creating additional stress for myself that I don't need to do? Because that is my personality. And I have to really watch where I'm getting out of balance. It takes a while, but I have to say it is fun doing a non-business thing. And I actually, not only did I get a participation award, I actually won two trophies last year that I'm extremely proud of. So one is Ballerina of the Year at my dance studio.
Well done. And I like the fact you've got them to hand. Decided.
Yes.
Very
you
nice.
You know why? Because it's shiny. Actually too tall. It's too tall to fit into my bookshelf. So I have to keep
into
it on
your
my
trophy
desk.
Cabinet. So you have it
yes,
to hand.
I do have it to hand. And I have another trophy, which isn't in here. Technically, it's not mine, but I'm going to claim it. My dog won first prize as an ice cream eating competition at the local dog show. And technically, it is his trophy, but I was there.
Yeah,
and
you
I
were
got
there.
To have
yeah.
the photo at the podium with him. And he doesn't have a trophy cabinet. So, but I think that's been such a good exploration for me of like, what else do I want to do? And where can I not take it too far? So I did my first ballet exam last year and I got a distinction, which was very exciting. But my mind starts to go, well, now you have to get your ballet teaching qualification, you know, and now you have to help your teacher run the studio. And now you have to, and I have to always watch myself that I'm not taking things too far, not taking on too many responsibilities. And not, I don't know, just not being a weirdo about it.
I think the weirdo thing, I think it's, you know, I did the same thing. I started running Park Run, the 5K, free 5K on a Saturday morning that they do in the UK and around the world. And 5 months later, I run the Paris Marathon because it's like, well, you start running and then you just keep running. But I've stopped
like
running.
Chris Gump.
But I got my husband into running, and so now he runs, and I don't have to anymore. I can just watch him run, and that's fine. So I did the thing. It's like, where do you go from a marathon? Well, you can do an ultra marathon, but I'm not mental, so I'm not going to do that. And I don't even like it that much. And I think that's the thing. It's like, prove the point. Yes, I can do that. Excellent. Now I'll let other people have a go. So, but it's all about balance,
yeah,
and it's all, you know, that's a message that we both preach very much in our businesses is that it's about life, and it's about life. That's why this podcast is called Life in Business. It's about the life in the business. Business isn't everything. Business is enormously important. We're both extremely passionate about our businesses, but life is often more interesting. And we should never forget that kind of like the life is the thing that matters. So I want
absolutely.
I really want to thank you for coming on and chatting today. And like I said in the intro, Denise Duffield-Thomas is a money mindset mentor. You would not know that because we haven't talked about money once, but I highly recommend that you read her books, that you listen to her podcast, and also join Money Bootcamp. It's a really good place to be. It's a really good community to be in. And my own Confidence to Grow program, I've learned a lot from the way that they're different spaces to be in, but I've learned a lot from the way that you've run yours, and I've been very inspired by the way that you've run your Money Bootcamp and your business, and I know that I've taken a lot of that into my business too. So thank you very much for being such a good sport coming along.
Well, I was going to say, you have to have me on again so we can talk about business next time.
Yeah.
Maybe, yes, I'll have to be a repeat guest.
We will, and we'll have some pre-prepared questions for that one, and we'll actually stick to the things that we're supposed to be talking about. But
no,
or maybe we won't, because it's our business and
never.
We can do what we like. Yay!
Well, okay, I'm honored. Thank you for having me on, even though I totally bullied you into it.
Thank you for bullying me into
it. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, it's been great to see you.
You're
again.
A gem.
And yeah, I'll see you on round two.
Yes. Bye.
Bye. Thank you for listening to Life in Business. Please make sure that you subscribe or follow so you don't miss any future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's show, please leave a review, as it helps others to find the podcast and spread the word that there's an easier way to do business. If you want to chat with me about today's episode or suggest a topic for the future, I would love to hear from you. You can find me on Instagram @LibbyLangley. See you next week.